Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey, everybody. In this episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, we're going to be talking to the creator of the Adult Swim show, Dream Corp LLC, Daniel Stessen. Let's do it.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to AfterBuzz TV Spotlight On, the show that gets you up close and personal with the people both in front and behind the camera that bring you all the great entertainment you get to watch at home on the TV or on your mobile streaming device. I'm your host, Frank Moran. My guest today has a series that's currently season 2, just debuted on October 21st for Dream Corp LLC on Adult Swim. It is an awesome show. We're going to break it all down with the creator, Daniel Stessen. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, watching the video for this song there, the visuals really are very kind of trippy to go with the music, which seems to tie in very well to Dream Corp LLC, which I know you mentioned that you use this a lot in the show.
This song by Black Mold is called Metal Spiderwebs, and it's actually, Black Mold is Chad Van Galen, who is an amazing artist who's on Sub Pop. Been a fan of him for many years, and then when season 1 got greenlit, I tracked him down, got his email, befriended him, started showing up to his shows, and was like, hey, we need to do this. And then he didn't believe me for a while, and I had to be like, this is real, this is happening. And since then, we've been super close friends. And in fact, he's an amazing illustrator, as you see up there. He actually designed Terry the Robot, voiced by Stephen Merchant. And again, this year he did the character design for Norf, who's a new Henson creature this year, played by Maria Bamford.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
That's cool. Well, because I feel like Hollywood can be the town where you run into many people that say, oh, I've got a great idea. Trust me, let's do something together. And then you never hear from them ever again.
Yeah.
So I can see why some people might throw up that kind of like, yeah, okay, sure. Really?
Yeah. He lives in Calgary in a snow fort, a womb-shaped snow fort. And he just comes out to play shows. And so when I would appear and I'd write him the email, I mean, he still has his Hotmail.
Yeah.
All right. So like he's a total recluse, but like the most talented, well-rounded artist that I've come across.
Is it, were you kind of nervous going to it with, just even though you've communicated with him, still coming to one of his appearances and going like, hey, remember me?
Yeah, hey, you know what? I wasn't, you know, I don't know. Something about the show, I just felt, it felt normal. I was like, this is going to work. And, you know, I felt like that the whole time. It's hard when you're new to just say, trust me.
Right.
But that's kind of what I've been doing the whole time. I'm just like, hey, listen, I got it. And then that's, you know, things take a long time, especially when you're the new kid on the block. You know, development, they bought the idea in 2013. So we're entering season 2 in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't think it would be as good as it is without that development process and a chance to step back and be like, you know what? Because in the original pilot, Stephen Merchant, Terry the Robot, was in a closet. He was more of like a Hal kind of character.
Okay.
And then I was like, why did I put Stephen Merchant in a closet? He should be in every room in the whole place.
Yeah, it's true. If you have Stephen Merchant, you want him just free roaming.
Yeah, yeah. So things like that, I try to take everything as it has a purpose or a reason. You know, if this thing's taking a little bit longer, it gives me time to improve it. And I'm always looking to improve. And I think the show, you know, if you look at season 1 compared to season 2, there's vast improvements in all the departments.
Well, before we dive into Dream Corp LLC specifically, let's dive into you a little bit.
Sure.
So, yeah, let's, the Daniels-Dessen pool will take a dip.
Oh, man. So, it's toxic.
So for you, since this has, it's both live action as well as animation, what was the first thing that captured your imagination? Was it more a live action element, TV shows and films, or was it more animation?
Mm. I mean, I've been a fan of the Henson world for many years. Never-Ending Story. Flight of the Navigator.
Dark Crystal.
Labyrinth. These are things, Return to Oz. The Wizard of Oz, of course. That's my favorite film, I'd have to say. So since I was a young kid, I just always wanted to create another world outside of my parents' divorce. I'm kidding. But I'm not kidding. They really did get divorced, but I'm happy about that. I can't imagine them together.
You know that my parents also divorced as well, and it is one thing as I got to know them later in life, mm-hmm. realizing like, yeah, these.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't see how.
I'm happy I'm here.
Yeah. Yes.
Great job. I wish I was a little taller. And that'd be my only like complaint.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, but otherwise I'd say yeah, I'm cool with where I'm at.
Yeah. It's good, man. I mean, no, I'd spent a lot of time. My folks both got remarried around the time I was 10. So I guess those first 10 years were just I was running around in the woods by myself, and I loved it.
So for somebody that had kind of really got sucked into the world of Henson, did you try your hand at creating your own puppets and stuff?
Yeah, I did a little bit of that in theater school. You know, but it was always for me more about like the entire world. I never got too much into puppets as much as just the avant-garde kind of German expressionism and just performance art in general. I got really into. I was inspired by Matthew Barney and Robert Wilson and those kind of Richard Serra. Like I something about the art world that leads us, we can think more freely. There isn't an exact answer to any of that stuff. Whereas a normal narrative kind of tells you, okay, even to the music, this is what you're supposed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not into that. And in theater school itself, I went to the National Theater Institute at the Eugene O'Neill Center, which is a beautiful, beautiful school in Waterford, Connecticut, that I'm a proud alum of. That's really where I went off. Like, that was like art school to me.
Because I have to mention, I always find that interesting because if you're watching these shows, these movies in your kind of early years, your formative years, and you're seeing them telling, maybe a more linear story. When does it come to the point for you when you feel like that is really cool, but I'm not satisfied with creating that myself? I want to do something that, as you're saying, the music doesn't have to mean exactly what's being seen on screen.
I mean,
had you tried creating stuff and then realized like, oh, this is not
really
fitting?
I mean, in school in general.
Yeah.
Like, when they give you kind of a template of what this should be, I always felt a little bit more. I kind of grasped onto things that were a little more strange and abstract, and even if it was straightforward, I'd try to shift it abstract. And then, then there's moments of your teachers in class being like, "Why am I watching this?" Or, "What is this?" And then they leave, and there's some frustrations. I love that school so much because of these moments of. There's one time. It's a man named Michael Cadman. He was part of the Royal Shakespeare Company. He's teaching Shakespeare to us at the O'Neill. And I did this whole, and we weren't doing Shakespeare in this moment, but we were doing a Tartuffe scene. And I was just all over the place and I was very proud of myself. And I finished and you have everyone looking at you from the school to give you the feedback. And Michael, he was like, he's very British. He's, in his 60s, and he's like, leans back, and he says, "Danny, you are not funny." And I was like, "Oh, that's funny," is what I said back. "Now that's funny." And it kind of got a laugh. But from that moment on, I was like, "Holy shit. This is, can I say shit on here?"
Please.
I said it twice.
Yeah.
From that point on, I was like, wow, this is, I love this place. You know, it gave me this, like, it kind of slapped you upside the head, and I always hear it. And now, you know, Danny, you are not funny. And I don't know, it was amazing. It just was like, it makes you go back to your room and be like, I was trying too hard. You know, I don't have to try that hard. Like, let the words guide me. Like, you know, and that's what the show, I like, you know, I tell all the actors, just nothing's important. This is normal every day. Throw it away. Throw it away. Throw it away. And I find that that is what grounds the show. It's completely absurd, but it, not to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, there's a British comedy called Peep Show. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes.
I mean, that is just, you know, top of the heap for me as far as how to stay grounded and be the most ridiculous and the most self-aware. And I love all those elements. But I think, you know, going to art school and theater school, you realize, like, you see all your mistakes out in front of you. You see other people make mistakes. You make mistakes. Their motto there is risk, fail, risk again. And I've kind of just surfed that to here with you.
Well, no, yeah,
right now.
Look at that. What a great way to, you know, to land on shore right here with this interview. Yeah. It was all building to this. There we go. Look at that.
Done.
That's it. Bye, everybody. Because I've done a lot of improv, so that's my background is coming up through that. And so that is always, whether it's being UCB or, you know, Improv Olympic or Groundlings, yeah. It's just, you know, you gotta, it's easier to go way out there and then dial you back than just really just kind of color within the lines. And
oh, yeah, you gotta see how far you can go every time. And then.
Yes. And you know. that it can be the most rewarding yet sometimes frustrating moments when you're doing that growth and you're seeing, wow, there's 5 people here watching this and they nobody liked that.
You know, it's funny when you're performing for 5 people, it is the worst. How is that? Why is that harder than 100?
I don't know. It's what I almost invariably hear is backstage, like, you know, they just, you know, it was because of the crowd. That's why the show wasn't good.
Uh-huh.
And you're like,
it's like some kind of self-worth thing that you're playing with yourself and being like, well, you know, I'm not good enough anyways. Like, you know, we all, as artists, we all have this imposter complex that's like, well, I shouldn't be here. I guess I don't know. This isn't very funny, or, you know, this painting isn't very good. But it takes a lot of courage to hang a painting on the wall or stand up there, especially in front of 5 people.
Yeah.
And just practice.
And because you can do that rehearsal by yourself with no audience and feel very successful.
Yeah.
But then you could just put in just 5 people and you're like,
I suck.
Yeah.
I think that's normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we all go through it. It's like, you know, it takes a long time to, it's why I guess they call it a craft, yeah? Like, yeah. You really need to practice. And there's some people who come right out the gate firing. But, you know, I think for the most part, it takes, you know, you gotta practice for a decade. They say, I heard this one great thing. Someone told me it takes 10 years to become an overnight success.
Which is so true.
And it's like, you got to put in the work, man. I don't think anything happened for me until I was ready for it to happen, you know, and could handle it. And I wasn't overthinking or, you know, just kind of being yourself, you know. When people always say, like, you know, get in there, just be yourself. And, you know, you say that to a high school kid who has no idea who he or she is. So
yeah,
be yourself. And they're like, I don't know who that is. And like that could lead us right into our, you know, into our 40s and like being like, you know, figuring it out. We're hopefully always evolving and trying to better ourselves and leave a positive mark on the world. So in 500 years and someone will uncover something nice about this place.
I feel like that's the biggest challenge for anybody though, is to the constant struggle to know yourself.
Yeah. And I, you know what? And that's, you know, they always say also know what, or write what you know. They say that a lot. But there is a fine line, you know, and it's just like, it's a lot of practice before that happens. It's like you have to learn how to write the treatment before anyone reads it and is like, oh, I like this. Mm-hmm. You could write you know, I've had the same idea 3 years ago, but I just couldn't figure out how to sell it, you know? So like, it just, you just get better at writing a treatment. You get better at hearing no.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh, I guess I'm not a piece of shit. I just didn't, I didn't, like, I didn't, I got, there's too many words. people don't have any time. Let's make more pictures than words. And then all of a sudden, I started booking music videos. It's amazing.
Because I feel like the challenge is, especially when you're starting out, is being having the sum of your influences kind of affecting how you want to be an artist, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Acting, art, music, whatever it might
yeah.
be. But then having that confidence to say, no, this is how I've been affected by all these influences, and this is what I want to say. And having the confidence to be able to do that.
Yeah. You know, what I've learned is not to think at all when I'm making something until I'm done. I write the end, or you finish the painting and step away. Because there was a time where I was making a painting, and I was like halfway through it, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then I couldn't finish it because I was afraid to ruin it.
You get too precious with everything.
Yeah, and now it's like, you can't be precious. You know, you can't be precious about anything. And, you know, that's the way I approach the show. I write, direct, and edit. So I kind of approach each one as that individual person. But the entire time, it's just like, oh, that's not working. We can beat that. Even if it's on the page, try it on the page. You know, in television, you don't get a lot of time to rehearse. So, you know, you might hear John Grise, Nick Rutherford say something, and we're like, I don't know. Like, it's funny on the page, but it's not working in here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's toss it out. What should we do? I saw you walk over and pick up this water. Just go do that and see what happens. So, like, I just throw it away, because there's something more natural with the spontaneity. You know, there's something more beautiful that can happen. And then all of a sudden the cinematographer is like, well, what if we here? And then you just get everyone kind of looking at it over here. And now it's a completely different thing, you know? And so I try not to be precious about anything.
Well, especially in something like that where it is your creation, but you've also opened that up to have other people collaborate with you. And so what's always great about when you're collaborating with somebody, they can just yes and your idea to make something even better than you had hopefully realized.
100%. I mean, you know, I always like having an editor to take a pass on the piece before I even step in, because they're going to always see or hear something different than you ever thought. And it's just that little spark that might kick you to the side and be like, oh, okay, I'm in. Like, let's go. Like, if the janitor has an idea, you know, like, I want to hear it, you know. I think everyone is going to think, you're not right. Like, you're not always right like this. And also, I feel like there's this age of art and just where we are in society at this moment in time where, you know, you have to be respectful. Like, you didn't hire everyone to just, like, slave away for you. And it's like, well, I want to hear you, you know. I guess I say sometimes when you're watching a football game or something and you're watching, you know, a quarterback, you know, the quarterback doesn't tell the free safety how to play defense.
Mm-hmm.
They just go and they believe in each other, you know, and like they're there for each other to support. So I see that everyone has a role and everyone's there to be a professional. And I'm not trying to dictate where that goes. It's more about, well, that's amazing. Let's try it. And there's no film anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's try it.
Yeah.
You know, we have time. We have 10 minutes left. Shoot it.
Is that something that that came very naturally to you to kind of lead a set like that? Or is that something that you had to be able to get comfortable with yourself to kind of let go and learn to, if I'm hiring all these great people in their fields, I need to trust their input?
I learned it I was making a film with some of my friends, you know, probably a decade ago or something. And we run up to a little lake house in Syracuse, New York, and where I'm from, and rented a house. And on the flight there, I'm finishing the script, and we get there, and I'm really trying to tell my friend who's a cinematographer, like, oh no, like, I'm framing things, and I'm doing, and it's like, it took me that experience to be like, wait a second, he's the photographer, you know, let me use these. I mean, everyone has a strength, so it wasn't. It was on that film that I realized A, this is never coming out. B, B, you know, you have to have a script to shoot it. And C, like, don't let people do their job. And that was from the technical aspect. I already knew that with the actors because I learned how to direct in theater school. So I was already real collaborative. I love getting in with the actors and seeing what they think or what they picture happening. I love doing that character work with them. It's super fun. But as far as the technical stuff, which I essentially taught myself, I learned very quickly, like, there is someone who takes a better photo than me, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, there is someone who is better with a hammer and nail. There is someone who is better with makeup. Like, then it becomes this thing that's, like, totally outside of your wheelhouse. You know, like, it takes money to get lights and learn how to do that. So it was always learning on the fly. I basically would consider myself and those around my age recession directors. You know, they have 10 grand for a music video, and it's got to be the best thing they've ever seen because this is it. This is it for the band. And you get 10 grand, and that's not enough to do anything. But if I edited it, and if I wrote it, if I did everything involved, produced it, then I could pay my rent. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it was I might be one of like 12 people who think the recession was amazing. I was already poor.
That's true. Yeah. So it's like, I'm used to living like this. It's fine. Yeah. And I can work hard and do all these jobs and still do it. All
right. Of course, I don't wish that to happen. But, you know, it was out of necessity. I learned how to do all the jobs.
So for you, once you graduate, do you start directing music videos while you're still finishing up school or right when you get out?
When I got out. Yeah, I was doing some music video stuff, transferred into short films, made an animated short called The Gold Sparrow with Mike Garza, who's now the lead rotoscope animator on Dream Corp. He had worked on Scanner Darkly, He was like, you want to make something? Hell yeah, you know? So we made this. It was supposed to be a music video, and then, of course, I tend to be a little bit too ambitious every single day.
That's a better way to go. I mean, why be under ambitious?
Yeah, exactly.
We can show these people walking down the street. That's fine.
Yeah,
cool. We got it.
And so this was supposed to be a music video. Then it was a 6-minute song, and I was like, well, if it's 6 minutes, why can't it be 13? And then had them write more music for the middle of the thing that I saw, and then it became this short film that we finished 2 years later, and the band had broken up and. But it didn't matter. They were so happy with it, and so are we. The band was in the video. It's a beautiful, soundtrack by the Brothers Lit is the name of the band. We had a great time. But that's how, and once that happened, and that started winning festivals and doing some good work without us being there. That's when. Kind of Dream Corp came along after that. I directed the Office farewells for NBC. So I had those two things at the same time happen. And from my experience, I learned I needed to combine those things for anyone to, so you need something to show, you know, and you can't keep shooting, you know, aiming for the fences the whole time while, you know, you just made this last thing. No one will ever believe you that you can do this other thing. Mm-hmm. You have let them put you in the box, but just like combine the last two things I made, which was The Office, something with The Office and The Gold Sparrow. So with that, I was able to have a package and say, look,
give me a shot.
Give me
a
shot.
I can do.
Exactly.
To jump back to music videos for one second, what is it like when you're collaborating with musicians, whether it's a solo artist or part of a group? Does it vary? Do a lot of them come in with a lot of ideas, like this is what we want our video to be, or are they more like, we're an open book, whatever you want to give us, we're game for?
I got very lucky. There were things, you know, treatments I had written, gotten pretty far in the mix with people. But really, the ones that ended up working out were the ones that they were like, you know what, go for it. There's one I'd made for Ben Harper. And I wrote this treatment, and did this whole thing. And he's like, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. And I wrote the treatment. And this is amazing. I go up in, you know, fancy building. I think it was at Capitol. And I'm in this building. And I'm, you know, really feeling. The guy's like, we just love what you're doing. We just want you to do your thing. We want you to do your thing. You know, just like the classic, you know, music manager, you know, just want, you know, Ben loves you. Just want you to do your thing. And then I hand it in and they're like, whoa. no. So it went to someone else and that happens. I was very used to that at that moment in time. And, but then Ben, he got in contact with someone, with the manager, and the manager calls me back and he's like, listen, Ben feels terrible that that happened. He's going to give you X amount of dough. They're going to be out of town traveling. They can't be in the video. He's going to give you this money. Just make whatever you want. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And so that was, you know, thank you, Ben Harper.
Yeah.
Because he really, he gave me that trust and made a video called Skin Thin. I took the budget, flew back to my hometown of Syracuse, kind of produced it there with, you know, put my best friend in the video. We used all my friend's double wide trailers and the Mack truck garage. And we made this whole thing. And it was a beautiful, beautiful experience that I wouldn't have gotten to do if there was a big label involved or anything like that. But that's my favorite experience that I've had on a music video. I've gotten really lucky to work with friends and
Those are those moments in life when somebody realizes your potential and wants to take that shot on you. Like, sure, everybody else might be like, yeah, no, that's a little too much. Not what we asked for.
Yeah.
But no, I see something in
you. He was like, pick any song on the record other than that one that you, because they're already making a video for that.
Yeah.
So he said, pick any song on the record and let's make a video for that and just do whatever you want. And I was in. Okay. So I like went through and I was listening to the album a bunch and really just super inspired by that freedom and that trust. And I heard the song Skin Thin and it reminded me of eighth grade, you know, like makeout parties in the snow and shit. And I was like, oh, I'm going there. I'm going back. And like I said, I cast Mike Powell, who's an amazing man living in Syracuse, and this other woman named Jessica Lawrence, who I never even had met before. And we were traveling all across. We shot a lot of the landscapes in South Dakota, then flew to Syracuse because it snows there every day. And I wanted snow. But we didn't have a female lead. And we were sitting in this pizza shop in my hometown. And my cousin, he's like, what about her? And I look over and I was like, yeah, that's her. And this is actually another funny thing. She walked by, dropped off a pizza somewhere, and I stopped her. And I said, okay, hi, my name's Dan. This is going to sound weird, but it's totally real. I think you'd be perfect for this video. It's for Ben Harper. And she was like, okay. You know, and I wrote her an email, and we, like, totally let her know. And she, like, put her job at the pizza shop on hold for a couple weeks while we shot it. That's amazing, man. It was a beautiful, you know, my grandmother's in it. She ended up passing like 6 months after we made it. It's like just a tribute to my hometown and I have Ben Harper to thank for it.
That is so cool. I mean, especially be able to have your grandmother be part
of
it.
Yeah, man.
Because everybody wants to, you know, like, hey, yeah, grandma, see what I'm doing? It's working.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be so cool. What was it like when you reached out to her and said, grandma, come on, be in this video?
Yeah, well, it was amazing. She actually, you know, she wasn't feeling well and she was down. She's always been supportive of my art for forever. We just kind of did it in three visits, you know, put the same sweater on her every time. And she did it, you know, we'd stay with her for about 15 minutes and film and then just hang out the rest of the time, no pressure. And we did that. We went to her house three separate occasions. And, you know, I mean, I went to school in Syracuse as well at Syracuse University. And, so I would do my laundry at her house and, you know, have her make BLTs while I was doing my laundry. It was like a beautiful memory. So to you know, honor that was awesome.
But yeah.
And like, you know, no one really knows, you know, your folks really don't know what you're doing until they see it. Or as Bukowski said, if your parents like what the art you're making, you're not doing it right. but it was cool to finally, like, get, you know, this, photograph her well and have the whole set. It was beautiful. And we used her, we shot in her kitchen. And we did, that's what the whole thing, if you go check it out, it's called Skin Thin by Ben Harper. And
that's
that
cool.
We just went up there with basically zeroed out, used all of it to get there. And it was just me and my cinematographer. And then we just rented a van and drove all around.
So when you finish that and give it back to Ben Harper and say, all right, you wanted, you gave me a shot, this is what I've got. What was his first reaction?
It was it was an extremely validating moment, you know, in my career, I guess. So we knew that him and the band were going to show up at this editing post house called Bonch. We knew they were going to be there. We were getting it all ready. And we weren't totally finished, but we had been working nonstop, myself and the editor, Jackie London. And we had been pushing hard on it. And when he came in, he watched it all the way through, and it was just completely silent afterwards. And he was like, play it again. And he was like, and we're like, okay. And he was like, he was just like, clapped a couple times. He's like, play it again. I want to see it again. And he was over the moon, and it made all of us be like, oh my God, he likes it. And, you know, we got chills, and you know, he ended up staying and hanging out for like the next 2 hours. And it was a huge moment in my life. Because, and he gave that opportunity, that trust, and then he liked it on top of it. And then it was a selection at South by Southwest that year. And it was an amazing gift he gave me.
Oh, that is fantastic.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I if I saw him today, I'd hug him.
Thank you, man.
Pull me off of him.
So now you mentioned once you kind of get your music videos, you've got the Office Farewells that you did, mm-hmm. kind of combine those in a package. Is that Dreamcore LLC starts kind of formulating in your head?
Yeah, I had a really good meeting at Adult Swim. And
I love the stuff that they do is just so many different kind of risks, so many different approaches mm-hmm. to animation and comedy. What was it about Adult Swim? I mean, growing up, what was the one series that kind of hooked you and said, like, this is a place I want to go if I ever have an opportunity to pitch something?
Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Yep, there you go.
Venture Brothers. those are two solid, you know, Space Ghost, of course, and C-Lab, love those. But Harvey Birdman was like, this is amazing. They had the rights to the Hanna-Barbera characters. Mm-hmm. This is innovative, right? You take those characters, you give them, and they're no longer superheroes anymore. They're all kind of washed up because no one's seen them in years. And that premise alone is amazing. So, like, the fact that that Mike Lazzo had that idea to flip this, like, that you have, what do you do with these rights? You know, that was the first thing that I thought was amazing. And then second, you get, you know, the writing is amazing. You get Colbert involved. It's hilarious. That first couple seasons of Harvey Birdman is like some of the best writing I've ever heard or seen on TV.
I mean, when you see like the old obscure characters like Peter Potamus and stuff showing up in there, it's just like, all right, yeah. If you grew up on loving those cartoons and see him kind of reinterpreted like that, you're like, all right, this
it's
is
hilarious,
really cool.
Man. Yeah. So, you know, Adult Swim was the first place I wanted to take Dream Corp, and that's the only place I took it.
And especially since they've kind of branched out, first doing a lot of animation, like with Space Ghost, they would have actors show up for the interview sections.
Mm-hmm.
But then they really started kind of branching out and incorporating live action into it as well.
I'll tell you what, coming back to the thing of like, you just learn how to write a treatment eventually. You know, I had a really good meeting with a woman named Ollie Green in Atlanta. And I was there for when Syracuse was playing basketball in the Final Four.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, you know what? I called my manager and I said, can you set up a general meeting with Adult Swim? I'd love to just check it out. And you know, like the on Yahoo when it's like top 10 things to do in an interview, you know?
Yep.
I like accidentally did all 10 things correctly. Like I knew a ton about the network. I was a fan of all these shows, and you know, there's some shows I was throwing out there. Ollie was like, you've seen that? Oh, man, you know, and she's like, you want a tour of the place? I was going crazy. I walked out with a sweatshirt, and I was all zipped up, and, you know, and I got back to my father and my brother-in-law, who I was there watching the basketball game with, they're like, how'd it go? I'm like, oh, I have no idea. Like, you know how these things go, you know? Like, you just kind of do it and wait and see. And then she called my manager and was like, well, I want to figure out something to do with him. And then he said, you know, try to rework that. I had a talk show idea for a while, and he's like, rework that into something for them. And then, as I said, I knew they were getting further into live action. Mm-hmm. I knew what I had, and I knew that I could have I already had a proof of concept. So I just made something out of what I already had in order to pitch to them. And then they bought it in the room.
It's cool because DreamCore is, it's all about having their dreams explored, but mm-hmm. it's live action. But when you go into the dreams, it's all rotoscoped.
Yeah.
So was the rotoscope original idea, or were you thinking we will just do some sort of animation?
No, because I had the Gold Sparrow is rotoscoped.
Okay.
So I knew that I didn't know how much of it was going to be that, but I knew all I was trying to do is get to season one. Yeah. You know what I mean? That was my only concern is, well, we get the pilot. And then they sat on the pilot for a couple months and tested it for focus groups. And if you ever want to feel really bad about yourself, read focus group notes about something you've worked on for the last year. Yeah, it's like YouTube comments times 15. So I really was diligent and took those notes, and I really wanted it to work. So I took those notes and I studied them, and then I went back. And I realized I hadn't watched Adult Swim since Harvey Birdman and since these things that I love, since Venture Brothers. And I was like, oh, maybe I need to go back, you know? So I went back and watched everything through, the entire whole section, commercials and all, everything. And then I started being like, okay, you know, someone needs to get kicked in the nuts in this script. That's basically what I walked away with. But like, you know, and Steve Merchant, who is an amazing man to have on my side, I can't figure it out, you know? And I watched all of this, and I'm still trying to figure out what to do. And he said, go and watch the pilot episode of House. And he's like, I've never seen it, but I imagine. He goes, it's about a doctor, and he's got help. And then, you know, and he said that, I went back, and I watched the pilot episode of House. I was texting him immediately. I'm, oh, my God, you know, this is it. Like, everyone's there to do a job. And that's what my original pilot was missing, is why everyone was there. Mm-hmm. And even in the original pilot, 88 was just a patient until he came. Yeah, he was. And Nick came in as just a patient. Oh, wow. And then I realized, like, oh, OK, he could be our eyes. And he's so brilliant. And he says every word exactly how I write it. And I couldn't believe it when I first met him. And so then I realized, like, okay, what if I did do The Office? You know, what if there was, with John Krasinski, I said, you know, okay, imagine 88 is like Jim from The Office. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, so, right? Then he can see how everything's strange. And with the blessing of Merchant and Krasinski, I was able to just like kind of lean into The Office a little bit. And then that's when that's how season one happened. Because the pilot itself is nothing like this. They're even wearing different colored lab coats.
Oh, wow.
But then, you know, then I saw that Rick and Morty was coming out, and I was like, oh, they can't be wearing white lab coats. Like, all of it's very practical, like why things are the way they are. And then, you know, pretty soon you pitch that idea to John. He's like, that makes sense. And then you have Jim from The Office explaining. Or you have Jim from The Office pitching Jim from The Office to the network. And I'm like, this is going to work.
And is it just from doing The Office farewells that you do make that connection with John Krasinski and Stephen Merchant?
Well, John Krasinski, fun fact, John Krasinski and I were college roommates at the National Theater Institute.
That is a very fun fact.
Yeah. At NTI, we were roommates there. We moved to New York City together. Then when he was in L.A., I was still in the city, but I kind of traveled across and slept on his couch for a couple months. Then I met Steve through John and Emily. So I met Steve. We became friends when John and Emily started a family. It was me and Steve had no friends anymore, and and we started hanging out together, and then that's when that started up. So it was just very organic, the whole thing. Really,
that's got to be cool to be able to just go from roommates pursuing your interest to all of a sudden it comes full circle, and now you're collaborating together on a project.
Yeah, I couldn't ask for anything else. I mean, especially learning from him. He has so much experience in television and film, and then, you know, adding Merchant to that mix, it's I feel like I'm getting an education in television every time I speak with those guys. So I tend to go a little bit out there, and they're able to like take these ideas and kind of bring them in closer for everyone to stomach.
Well, it does. When I think of Stephen Merchant, then I can't help but think of the HBO series for the Ricky Gervais Show, where they would do the animation for Carl's stories.
Certainly.
A different venue, sure. But the idea of at least using animation to bring these fantastical stories or
Absolutely.
Realities to life.
Yeah. I mean, Steve's just so brilliant. He's an amazing actor, and to lend his voice to this is fantastic. Yeah.
So season 2 just premiered this past Sunday on the 21st.
Correct.
Jimmy Simpson guest stars. I always enjoy watching him when he does pop up.
He's amazing.
He's always fun to watch.
He's so intense. He gives everything he has. I remember, you know, because when we're shooting the dream sequences, we're on a large grid. So the 3D animators can track what the world actually looks like. So there's roto animators and there's 3D animators. And so Jimmy's just on this big grid, just, you know, going for it. And there is a couple times where, you know, as I'm getting to, you know, I met him that day. And you kind of, each actor, when you meet that day, is you get a certain, you can feel them out. You know, you have to kind of be a chameleon to adapt with each person and how what their process is and respect it, you know. And when he came in, he was like ready to go. He's on fire. Everything he is coming right from his heart, you know. It's not as much like he's wrapping his head around the words, but it's really coming from a genuine, visceral place, and it is the most beautiful thing to watch happen. So like when you see him in this end, he's really in the end of episode one, he's really shedding a tear. And you can feel it through the animation. And that's what's so beautiful about Rotoscope is it's so surreal, but they can capture each little movement and each little kind of nuance. And someone like Jimmy is so nuanced. And it really does come through in the animation.
And what I love about a series like this, especially whether it's on Adult Swim or anywhere, but it does have the comedy, but it also just has the heart to it as well, too. This is a story that... You're telling a story about a person going through an enormous struggle. He's lost his relationship, and he's trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life. And so when you can combine that comedy with a genuine, like, heart-tugging emotion, it's like that's always my favorite combination.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I that's real life. That's what happens. And, I mean, you know, it's like – I'm going to talk about a funeral real quick. If you can – it's okay – it's okay to let out a little laughter in a serious moment. It's okay to feel sad when everyone around you feels it's okay. Like, you know, that's what happens in real life. And I've been thinking about the term sitcom recently, like in, you know, situational comedy. It's a beautiful thing when I think it's gotten completely washed over and it's become kind of sterile, the term. But I've been thinking about it lately. Because of the show, and people sometimes say sitcom, and I'm like, I don't know. But I guess so, because it is situational, and every patient's different, and it's more of a, you know, it's a procedural, mm-hmm. I think. But in that real world, in our real day-to-day life, there are things that will upset you, and there are things that will make you laugh in an 11-minute span. So if I can help people forget about what's going on in their lives or outside their front door for 15 minutes every day, like, I think we're doing something right, you know? but to me, that emotional, grounding it in some real emotions is really important to me because listen, I think sad is funny also. Like, I love undercutting a beautiful scene as yeah. well, as much as anything else. But in Jimmy's episode, there is some real heart, that's for sure.
It is. I am excited. I came in on for season two, and looking back for the stuff for season one, so I am excited. This is it's always nice to discover a new show.
Oh my God! I mean, listen, this year we have it's Jimmy Simpson, Rupert Friend, Craig Robinson, Mo Collins, Natalie Morales, Daryl Hammond, Toby Kebbell, Maria Bamford. The list is super legit this year, and I'm so thankful that all of these extremely talented actors want to be part of this weird show.
Yeah. I feel like that's always a good thing when people like it's always the challenge of kind of bringing your vision to life,
yeah.
and you start finding those people that will go in early because they they believe in you, and they're like, all right, I'm going to go with Dan and go with this idea. But then when people start seeing it,
exactly,
they're going, oh, wait, that is cool. Uh-huh. All right, yeah, I would like to be a part of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's hard to make something from scratch. That's the facts. I mean, season one, felt like I was dragging it by the hair to get it over the finish line. And then when they re-upped, and now there's only 6 episodes in season one. There's 14 in season two. And now it feels like I have some help, and I'm ready. And the team is real. It's a really exciting time.
That is so cool. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest has been Daniel Stessen. The show is Dreamcourt LLC. Airs Sunday nights on Adult Swim. What time is it on Adult Swim?
Midnight, prime time.
That's it. There you go. Now, Daniel, if they want to keep up to date with everything you're doing, whether it's with Dreamcourt or other projects you may be working on, what's the best place to find you on social media?
Instagram, Daniel Stessen, Instagram. My Twitter is very fun. You can put up with it for about 3 days, but it's an ongoing art project I've been doing for about 7 years.
I'm going to take that challenge. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been your host, Frank Moran. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. We'll be back with another exciting episode of AfterBuzz TV Spotlight on right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.